Organic Farming Research Foundation is honored to share this recording of a recent conversation we had with Emily Zeng, farmer at Local Color Farm and Fiber. In the 2022 National Organic Research Agenda report, organic farmers expressed a common concern about the lack of information available for integrated crop and livestock systems. The report also showed that the number one source of information for organic farmers is other farmers. This interview is part of a suite of resources on crop-livestock integration that OFRF created in response to that need. These interviews, farmer profiles, downloadable resources, and more are available for free on our website at ofrf.org. These resources were created with funding support from Organic Valley's Farmers Advocating for Organics program. Keep listening to hear Emily discuss the challenges and benefits of integrating crops and livestock into her production systems in Puyallup, Washington. This audio has been edited from a longer, more intimate conversation between Emily and OFRF's research and education team. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, my name is Emily Sun. I farm at Local Color Farm and Fiber, which is in the Puyallup Valley in Washington State, about an hour or so south of Seattle.
Will you tell us a little bit about your farm, how many acres you manage, what your main crops are?
We farm on about 12 acres that we own. About 1 acre is hedgerow by the river. And then I would say there's about an acre or so of like buildings and roads and stuff like that. And then for veggie production, about 2-ish acres. And we have 6 tunnels. And then for sheep, that leaves about 6 or so acres of permanent pasture. And then we also lease between 1 and 5 acres from a neighbor for a combination of grazing or crops. Right now, we have about 30 or so sheep, and we bred about 12 ewes who are due to lamb at the end of March. And the breed that we have is like known for having a ton of lambs. And so typically we do have like a 250% lambing rate. So we have a lot of triplets. And then kind of an amazing thing is we've been working with some friends who they have an animal-only farm, a meat farm. And so they've been buying our weaned lambs like July-ish every year, and then they grow them out. And so we finish maybe 5 to 7 lambs each year, but most of them we've been able to move to another farm with even more grass. And so we just have our breeding stock mostly here. And we mostly grow vegetables, in particular East Asian vegetables for farmers market and CSA program and some food bank contracts. And we also have a small flock of thin sheep that we raise for wool and for meat.
How long have you been certified organic?
2023 is my 10th year farming, and I've only ever farmed in the Pacific Northwest. This is our 5th year at this particular farm. We are transitioning to certified organic. The land that we farm on now was conventional for a number of years. And so now we're like just kind of completing the transitions of how the property is being managed. This is the year that I hope to do all the paperwork. The first year we were here, it was just cover crop. And then kind of 2nd year, we were like shifting between different properties. And so this property used to be conventional green beans, and our surrounding area is still mostly conventional farmland or increasingly some residential stuff. Yeah, so I guess it's been like kind of interesting to like move towards organic amongst surrounding more conventional. So now we're like through the transition years. And then kind of the other big thing was we were unable to buy like certified organic hay for our sheep that we then make into compost. But now that we've been here for a while, we've been able to like find those growers that are organic in order to support us being organic.
As you got started with integrating crops and livestock, which came first for you, the animals or the plants?
The farm started as like a side project to like working for other farmers. And so I had bought like a little flock of sheep to graze at a neighbor's property. And so I guess the livestock came first. And then kind of the other thing that I started growing was, and we still grow, is a lot of natural dye plants to dye the fiber of the sheep. And so they kind of came together a little bit simultaneously, but we did buy the sheep first. Maybe that wasn't wise to start with animals, but that's what happened.
What makes you say that?
So we bought the sheep because another farmer was moving away from sheep, and then I had done chores for them, and she asked if I wanted the sheep, and I was like, well, I think so, but I had not set up any lease ground for them to live at, and like it was a slow, like she wasn't in a hurry to not have animals anymore, but I think if I was maybe a little bit wiser, I probably would have thought it more through, but maybe you're more impulsive when you're young.
What do you consider your primary production at this point?
Right now, our primary production is fresh market vegetables. So about 80% of the farm revenue is from our crops.
Can you tell us about your path into integrating livestock onto the land where you also grow crops?
Part of it is the parcel that we have landed on is a really irregular shape, which is kind of why a lot of the bigger farmers around us were not really like keen on farming it. And we're right next to the Puyallup River. And so there are all these like little sections that would be really hard to grow crops in, but would be really easy to graze on. And then the other big thing is we do work a lot of cover crops into our rotations. And so we use the sheep a lot to mow the cover crops, especially if it's a section is in like a 1 year fallow of many cover crops. And then the other way we use the sheep is they'll graze old crop residue. We do grow a lot of brassicas in the Northwest, and so they do eat a lot of old kale stalks and things like that. So it's a space that we're going from a crop into cover crop just for food safe reasons. And if we do have crops that are that have to be cropped again with another crop, I guess, after the first one. So like a common one we do here is like garlic into fall roots is any debris. We'll just like bring them to the sheep versus bringing it to the compost. I guess another like small livestock thing that we do is we do have a couple of rabbit tractors that we move through like smaller areas that maybe it doesn't make sense to like fence off for sheep. I personally don't love chickens. I know a lot of people do, but like the rabbits, I feel like kind of do similar type work in this situation. So maybe an example is if we have some salad crops in a tunnel that are fall salad that there's like not enough time to plant like a winter crop there, or yeah, we just won't need that space for a couple of months. Then we'll just drag the rabbits through versus like mowing it with a mower.
Was there a particular push to begin the practice of integrating crops and livestock?
So I guess kind of a big inspiration for me to integrate livestock with crops is like one of the first farms I worked at did some of that. And so, yeah, and I guess it always has seemed like a interesting like relationship to have animals on land that will be crops. It is true, like most farms like end up choosing one or the other to focus on for good reason, like, you know, just calendar of the year. But I find it like really beneficial to have sheep. We're able to make all of our compost on farm with their bedding pack. And so I do feel like it's hard to buy the quality of compost that we make in our area. So that is another reason why we've kept the sheep.
Is there anything you know now that would change how you approached your first season?
Yeah, so some things I know now that could have informed some decisions. I guess we like very little animal handling equipment and I guess youthful backs, I don't know. So I probably would have invested in like a shoot system much sooner versus relying on, I guess, luck and will to like try to catch animals. That's probably the biggest thing. And yeah, we do move them like so frequently that they generally will go to where we want them to go. But having a little bit more equipment is very helpful.
What types of changes have you seen on the farm in terms of the crop yield, animal health, or the soil health?
So I guess we've seen a lot of benefits from our farming systems. Yeah, it's been interesting because like this property was managed conventionally for so long, just to like see how we've farmed and like seeing the difference. But like the like organic matter has doubled in the time that we've been here. I do find that so Washington has like a Mediterranean climate where it's very dry in the summertime. So it will rain usually through June and then like no rain at all until September or so. So we do end up irrigating quite a bit. And with the increased organic matter, I do think we have just irrigated less than we used to have to, which is great. And then I do think being able to intentionally integrate so many cover crops that are being managed by grazing has been really helpful. Like the on-farm generated fertility is actually like really amazing.
Are there any benefits that you are experiencing that you did not expect or that have been a surprise to you?
So some benefits that were a surprise. So I guess a lot of people who end up working here have never had a lot of animal, like farm animal interaction. And so most people like have never even really worked on a farm before. And so I think it's interesting to like be able to give people that experience of both working with vegetables and then managing sheep. I guess it's an experience that I kind of by luck had by working at farm when I first started farming. And there's just so few farms in our area that seem to have both animals and crops.
What remains your biggest challenge on the farm with the crops and the livestock?
A couple of challenges that have come up. This is kind of a newer one, is kind of a new pest that is working its way south from British Columbia. It's like a type of invasive wireworm that really loves like cereal crop roots. And so some of the areas that we've like heavily used a lot of rye or oats for a whole year, which I guess they love, like have quite a bit of wireworm pressure. And so when we then try to flip it into like certain vegetables, really have decimated that crop. And so I've been doing we've like changed some cover crops to try to be like palatable for livestock to graze, but also like maybe less delicious for the wireworm. So that's been kind of a newer challenge in the last year. But I guess the wireworm really loves organic matter. So I think it used to definitely not be a problem until we like increased it so much. And then kind of some other challenges is we have started leasing a little bit of space just to keep more time in our rotations. And so part of it is like our farm is like a weird long L. And so the permanent pasture, most of that I can't ever really see like easily being crop areas because all the rows would be like different lengths. So I started leasing some space from neighbors just to build a little bit more time into the rotation so we can still fallow as much as we would like.
Can you give some examples of the alternatives to cereal grains that you are using for cover crop?
Okay, so I guess one example would be if it's like a late summer fallow, we'll do buckwheat that will winter kill here and then also seed crimson clover at the same time. And so after the buckwheat winter kills, or sometimes they'll graze it with the sheep, although it's like not their favorite, but they will eat it. Then the clover is able to come up and it will not winter kill here if it starts growing more in the fall. I think if we planted it earlier in the summer and it was like really mature going into the winter, it would winter kill. And then kind of the other thing we started doing is more like Sudan grass in the summer. And then we do use a lot of like hairy vetch. And so kind of the example is We have like a big section of fall brassicas that we're harvesting until around the end of December. And so it's like not enough time to like put a cover crop in. And so after the first or second cultivation, we'll seed hairy vetch in the pads. And then so right about now, actually, it looks like it's like waking up. And so a lot of the brassicas will kind of like melt away in the winter, and then the hairy vetch will like climb over, I don't know, the structure of the old broccoli, I guess. And then the sheep really do like eating that. So some of the brassicas will remain alive over the winter. And so we'll harvest like the rapini, and then we'll just fence it off for the animals to eat. If it was just like old brassicas, I think they'd be less stoked. But like the timing is kind of tricky on that one. And we definitely haven't gotten it right a number of years. So
are there any non-production challenges that you are dealing with? Maybe around labor, sales, or time management?
Yeah, so non-production challenges, definitely some labor issues. I guess I know many farms are located in like rural or sort of rural areas that we have just very little housing available. And so a lot of people who are interested in working like have to commute from either Seattle or Tacoma. And then because of that drive, most people only want to work a couple days a week. And so it's like just trying to patch enough people who work 2 days a week to like have enough labor. So that's been an issue past few years. And then kind of on like the time management side, although I guess we're trying to fix this, we tend to lamb end of March to April, just to like by the time everyone's lambed, like the grass is nice and so we can release them. But that is also a busy period, like, you know, starting up farm, greenhouse work and all that. And so do end up being very tired at the beginning of the year, which is not great when you're like, I have to farm until December. So the new strategy is building like a much better sheep barn that we can lamb in a little bit earlier, just to have a little bit more space and time before like needing to be very busy doing field work.
What is the labor pool on your farm?
I work on the farm, and then my husband has like a regular job, but is forced to work on the farm. And then we also usually have a crew of between 2 and 4 people every year. And most people choose to work from March to November, maybe a little bit in December, just to like provide like a diversity of experience. So you're just not always meeting.
What types of infrastructure on your farm have you changed or adapted? Or is there infrastructure that you wish you had that would make this type of production system more efficient?
Yeah, so actually, this is kind of a huge year of infrastructure improvements on our farm. When we bought this property, there was like nothing on it, which has presented some challenges. In a sense, it did take me a couple of years to kind of decide what I wanted. So I guess I'm grateful to have that time, even though the whole time I did wish like we had water here or something. So yeah, so kind of the main thing is here, our climate is so wet over the winter, we can't really graze at all. Basically, once it starts raining late fall until about April. And so like having a good heavy use area that the animals can spend their time on in the winter, it's good. And then we're also right next to river. And so there is the possibility of flooding. And so building up their winter area, so it's like a little island in case it does flood. And then maybe our other thing is, which I think we're also building this year, is like kind of a little bit nicer way to manage all of our compost. And so we have like our biggest pile, which is the bedding pack pile that composts. So we'll pull it out usually by July, I guess. And then that seems to compost like pretty quickly, like if we turn it fast enough. And then that's ready to spread on the fields the following spring. And then we also have like a couple of piles that are, I don't know, one pile is like filled with, you know, like animal refuse that from what I understand should sit a little bit longer. And then we have just another pile of like vegetable debris and all that. So it's been, I would say inefficiently managed, but I think we're trying to put in a manure storage structure, I guess, of the roof because of all of the rain we get. So there's like less tarps blowing everywhere. Kind of the other big thing is managing all that compost.
Can you talk about how you manage food safety on the farm? What are the main issues that you deal with?
Yeah, so kind of the big thing is for food safety is like, it's really not ideal to have raw manure on lettuce, right? So the big thing is making sure you have the 3 months that are recommended, required, I guess, between any like raw manure application and then when you can harvest something from that space. That's kind of the reason why if the animals are in the vegetable space, like they're on cover crop that is like in a fallow rotation, or they'll be on cover crop that will go into like winter squash or something that has like a really long season. And then kind of the other thing is like making sure the winter area, which, you know, despite some like all of our efforts, like there is like a little bit of runoff. And so that is like down the field from where all the vegetables are. And then we also, because it's like close to the river, we do have like a really healthy hedgerow, I guess, that is between the animals and the river just to catch any nutrient runoff.
Are there any key resources that you have used in learning about crop livestock integration that you might recommend to others? Or are there resources that you wish were available for farmers?
We have had to do a lot of permitting for our various infrastructure projects this winter. And so just like some assistance with a liaison between like farmers and like the county. I think we all have similar goals, but like, it's just a lot of paperwork. So that I think would be great for us. And then resources that I've used besides talking to other farmers, I do learn like bits and things from like other farmers that I see on Instagram. Like even just like a short video of just like the way someone has maybe set up like their lambing area. It's always interesting to see. I did watch like a good webinar from FACT, Food Animal Concern Trust. And so they are really concerned with the treatment of animals, food animals. And so they have a lot of good resources about different practices ranging from like some integration between crops and animals and also like different management systems. So that's been helpful.
What types of nutrient management considerations do you have to take into account when you are rotating your crops and livestock?
So nutrient management considerations that we take into consideration when rotating livestock and crops, I think that kind of has to do with how we've set up our plant rotations. And so generally, if we're like going out of a one-year fallow, we'll probably put that space into a plant family that tends to be higher need in nutrients. So usually we'll probably go to brassicas or cucurbits, depending on the weed pressure. That's kind of one thing. And then we also don't spread our nice compost everywhere every year. Right now, it's like every 4 years, 1 year is fallow. And so it's the third year is when we'll put a heavy compost application. So it's like been out of cover crop and out of like sheep for a while. And even if we're just putting like salad or something there, usually we'll do more compost there on top of the bed for nutrients, but also to help with some weed pressure that is probably built up over the last few years.
Can you give us an example of what a typical rotation looks like for you over a year or a cycle?
Okay, we'll go fallow. And then it's like kind of changed every year just because we've like added more space and like done less of certain crops. So I think this year, if it's like coming out of fallow, it's going into brassicas in the like spring. And then will go into overwintered onions or garlic. So that's like we plant them in the fall. And then that comes out here like June, July. And so then sometimes we'll do like compost and then put salad crops, which are pretty fast crops. And then let's see, often we'll just winter kill in the field. And then we could go back to like a cover crop in the spring. Or if we are able to, I don't know, sometimes like there's enough chickweed, the native cover crop here, that it could give an opportunity to go back into production for like another spring roots the next year because it's like empty enough. Our like windows to work soil are kind of short in the spring. And so having a space that is like winter killed, but not cover cropped is nice to like get carrots and beets in early enough. And then we've kind of moved our cucurbits to like our neighboring farm. And so it's just like cucurbits, cover crop, animals back to cucurbits.
And can you describe a little more where the sheep fit into this rotation?
So the sheep would go in if it's like something is in a full season of cover crop, like hopefully we've planted some cover crop over the winter, like in the fall that overwinters. And so they'll graze that in the spring and then we will seed buckwheat or maybe Sudan grass for the summer and they'll graze it periodically. And then we'll seed another like cover crop that'll be for the winter is usually how it goes.
Have you ever used any type of USDA funding support, either through the NRCS or SARE, to help support the farm operation?
Yes, so we've used a lot of NRCS funding to support farm. And then the other sources are like Conservation District has funded a lot of grants. Like many people, we've used the NRCS EQIP high tunnel program a couple of times. We've used some NRCS funding for installing an irrigation system, which is great. We do have to irrigate our pasture in the summer. And so just figuring out like a good system for us that is like efficient, it's great to get some funding for that. And then our conservation district has helped fund, I guess, two things. Our to-be-built manure storage facility, the roof, and putting gutters on barns that have animals in them. It's been great. And then we did get a grant to put in a hedgerow between us and the river. Overall, it's been a positive experience to work with all these agencies. Definitely wouldn't be able to buy all of this ourselves. And then being able to fund maybe practices you would have done anyway, like gutters, but you know, anything helps.
What about your local extension service? Have you utilized support from them at all?
From extension, a little bit. We are where we are in Puyallup. There's WSU campuses nearby. And so we've been able to access a lot of the research that they've been doing there, especially regarding cover crops in our area.
For our last question, can you walk us through an example of what a typical day looks like on your farm?
Yeah, so a typical summer day, I guess that's more exciting. Awake, do chores. Yeah, so usually there's plant chores and then also animal chores. I tend to do the animal chores every day since I'm here. And then usually we'll have someone on the crew do some of the plant related chores like watering the greenhouse, etc. And then once everyone is here for the day, typically probably harvest in the morning when it's cooler. And then yeah, try to wrap stuff up that's more time sensitive like that by lunchtime. And then in the afternoon, either we'll do stuff like weeding or some greenhouse work. Often one day a week, someone will build paddocks for the next few rotations for all the sheep. And then once everyone leaves for the day, that is typically when I do, if like there's some tractor work that needs to be done, I'll do it after people are gone. I'm trying to do a little bit better this year about like integrating some personal time in the summer. We'll see how I do. But like we are also on like a nice like trail system, like an old rail to trail situation. So in my most ideal typical day, then I like go for a bike ride, no matter how short. In the summer, if it's been hot, we'll probably have to water the animals in the evening and then cook dinner and, I don't know, watch an episode of something.
Thank you so much, Emily, for sharing your time and your story with us today. OFRF would like to thank Emily Zhang and Local Color Farm and Fiber for sharing their story. This interview was created with funding from Organic Valley's Farmers Advocating for Organics program. We thank them and other funders for their ongoing support. Be sure to visit our website to explore the other resources on integrated crop livestock systems at ofrf.org/crop-livestock-integration. Thank you for listening.